Hey, it's Andrew Siciliano. Coming up on Inside Coverage, Charles Davis from the NFL Network Draft Desk. What would he do if he were the Jets at two? And would you take Jordan Tyson over Carnell Tate? Plus, what do we make of the latest Aaron Rodgers no news out of Pittsburgh? Charles Robinson, Ben Fox with me. It's Inside Coverage next. Finally, it's here, friends. Welcome to Draft Week, everybody, and welcome to another edition of Inside Coverage on Yahoo, the how and the why, any and everything you need to know about the National Football League. Hope you had a fantastic weekend. I know we did, at least speaking for myself. I know I did. We are back together again, recording this on a Monday, 3 days away from the NFL's annual selection meeting. It's a draft that allegedly isn't any good, which, in my opinion, makes it that much more fun. Yahoo senior NFL writer Charles Robinson is here. Our gambling expert Ben Fox is here as well. C-Rob, how the heck are you, my friend?
It's great. I mean, I'm great. It's funny that you say that. You know, it's a draft. I apologize for that. Look at my phone blowing up as we get on the air here.
I mean, that speaks how good the draft is.
It's exactly it, right? Thing. Yeah. Right as I was about to say that the fact that we don't know how the draft is really going to play out after pick one, I think we can all agree that Mendoza is going to be pick one. But once we get beyond that, for a quote unquote bad draft or boring draft or lack star power, all these things, it doesn't lack for drama because, you know, I was having a conversation with someone this morning about the Cowboys potentially trading up to six and whether that could happen before, you know, the selections kick off or not. And I said, how can you trade up to six? You don't know who's going to be there. Like, okay, if you have
nobody was going to be there,
right? If you have five players after Mendoza, if you sit there and you say, okay, we know Mendoza is going to go one, and then we have five players we really love, and we'd like to get any one of those five at six, then potentially I can see the Cowboys trading up. But at this point, I don't know how you trade up to the sixth pick in the draft if you're the Cowboys or anyone else, because you simply don't know who's going to be there at number six. I don't know for sure, and Ben can obviously speak to this because the betting odds are definitely starting to at least try to nail it down. I don't even know who's going to be number two at this stage.
Yeah, it's and covering it from the betting perspective is certainly interesting as well. And that number two pick has flip-flop. It keeps going back and forth or ahead. Arvel Reese was the favorite for a long time. Last week, it flipped to David Bailey, flipped back to Reese, flipped back. And really, in the last like 24 hours, now Reese is a stronger favorite. I think he's about minus 300 as of today. So again, all that means is that there's some smoke because there's nothing more that happened on the field, right? It's not like he's run another 40 or he had a pro day or anything like that. But some people are betting that. Odds makers are moving it. So, yes, certainly looking at the top 10 has been really interesting. And obviously, as we'll discuss, there's been some new developments with people who hold, teams that hold picks in the top 10 as well.
Yeah, there are two big bits of news, really, in the last 36 hours. Let's break them down for you. Let's set up the show, first of all. Charles Davis, friend of the program, one of my favorite people on earth, and I truly do mean this. Charles Davis from NFL Network, and I mean, I guess it's all one big family, / ESPN, who will be on the desk Thursday evening in Pittsburgh, will join us coming up in about 20 minutes. That's point of information number one. Point of information number two. Saturday evening, there was a trade that kind of blew my mind. I actually, when I saw it on my phone, I thought it was a fake Ian Rappaport account. It wasn't. The trade actually happened. The Giants got a first-round pick. And not only a first-round pick, they got 10 overall from the Bengals for Dexter Lawrence, who wanted a contract. This is a very un-Bengals thing to do. They like cheap labor. They could have had that at 10, but they decided that Dexter Lawrence was better than any other pick they could get at 10, and they made the deal. They gave up the pick, and they gave him a new contract. Now, it's not like buckets of money, but they did something they generally don't do. Add guaranteed money to a contract. It was the most un-Bengals thing of all time. And then they got the physical done. And then he was on the podium on a Monday. They didn't send an Uber. They actually sent a private plane. He got there Sunday. And then today, if you want to hear a little bit of Dexter Lawrence, he admitted, and I kind of like this, it's charming, that there's some pressure.
how much fire do you have to win?
I can't explain it. Like I get like, you know, I get a little tense when somebody asks me that, and then it's burning fire that, you know, for them to, you know, bring me in the way they did and, you know, give up what they did is I owe it to them to go out there and, you know, dominate on that field. And that's what I plan on doing.
This is one of those rare trades where it really does benefit both teams. Like I've talked my way into thinking the Giants got a steal.
Yeah.
Then I've talked my way into thinking it was a great trade for the Bengals. And right. Then I go back and then I go forth and then I go back. I guess that means it's a fair trade.
Yeah, I know. You know, I think it's interesting because I think the reaction, you know, just texting with people around the league after it went down, I think there was a feeling that Lawrence was worth more than this because of how the...
Really?
Just because of how the 10th pick is valued in this draft.
I didn't think they were going to get a pick. First-round pick. I didn't think they were going to get a pick this...
Yeah, see, I didn't... I felt that he was... Certainly when things... felt like they fractured with the Giants. And, you know, I was working on a trade piece late last week, and I'm like, okay, realistically, who are some pieces, some guys, some players out there who look like they could be traded? And I'm talking to multiple people across the league, and I'm saying, like, you know, who would you expect will get calls? You know, if you're not going to talk about your team, you know, look a field and tell me, you know, who are the players out there that sure. you would expect either leading into the draft or during the draft will get traded. And Lawrence was certainly one that popped up prominently on most lists. And I felt like the opinion was he's actually worth a first and plus, like a first and a player, a first and wow. maybe, you know, a couple of other picks beyond 2026. There wasn't anyone who said you can't get a first to this guy because of I think the feeling is he's so defensively dominant for the position, and it's so important. It can be, depending on the scheme, depending on what conference you play in, depending on who your coordinator is, if you can get inside pressure on a defensive line now, that is worth so much to teams. Even in some respects, I've heard the opinion that, look, if you can get a defensive tackle who can pressure the quarterback and create havoc or command the attention of two plus players on every single play, it might be more important than an edge rusher. It might be more important than a lockdown corner, just because of the fact that moving a quarterback off the spot is so important for some teams defensively, but it also depends on what the surrounding pieces are. So I think in my mind, you know, when it went down again, there were some individuals that hit me up and said, oh, I thought, you know, maybe you'd get a little more than that. But these were also individuals who were not impressed with the 2026 NFL mm-hmm. draft. They're not impressed with what's going to come off the board at the 10th overall pick. They said there's no doubt he's definitely a far better overall talent and proven talent than anything you're going to get at the 10th pick. But they also expressed surprise that the Bengals were willing to add money. This is unlike, as you said, it's unlike the Bengals to do that. And a few of them framed it as like, look, this is a Joe Burrow trade. They're Absolutely. Showing Joe Burrow, we're not going to do this again. We're not yeah. going to do what we did last offseason. We're not going to leave the cupboard bare. Yes, Trey Hendrickson's out the door. We are concerned about whether or not you might be looking for the door yourself after the 2026 season. So we're going to add a player that we think can be impactful in the middle of the defense up front and has captain-like qualities, somebody who can be a leader as well. So it's, I think it was a surprise maybe on both ends. And, you know, for the Giants, it gives you some flexibility. Now you can take an offensive and defensive piece at 5 and 10. You don't feel like you're leaving Jackson Dart out in the cold. You don't feel like you're ignoring a defense that can still use pieces that could be added. If I would say if the Giants walk away, let's just say for the heck of it, you walk away with Jeremiah Love and Caleb Downs or, you know, Sonny Styles and then a wide receiver at 10, you probably have to feel pretty good. And I also think it's an indication that John Harbaugh's not playing around, that, you know, if you're not going to be there, you're not going to be aboard, and you're going to be pressing back this early on in his regime, you're not going to be around long.
I see Rob covered every single angle, I think. There's no more meat on the bone, see Rob.
It was a long conversation. There's a lot of conversations I've had over the last couple of days.
Listen, that's all great stuff. And honestly, I think as Andrew was alluding to, we didn't, as we were discussing this last week and when the trade request was made, it was really a okay what is the compensation? Are they going to get a first? And it sounds like, to your point, definitely a first. Now, I think it's always interesting, right, with trades, it takes two to tango. And in this case, you have kind of a Giants team with a new regime coming in on a little different timeline. They're looking for draft picks and to get younger, whereas the Bengals are in a win now mode and a little more desperate. And obviously they want to appease Joe Burrow, as you said. And so that's where it kind of lines up. When the trade came out, I was expecting something to go back to the Bengals as well, like a third or, you know, maybe even a second round pick, something else to go back. So that was the surprise when it was the 10th pick and that was it. But I think it's interesting just that we always talk about, you know, in the draft, oh, this team would love to trade back or this team would love to trade here. Well, you need a trade partner. And I think in this case, just kind of it matched up perfectly for both teams to have that. The Bengals as well, we always, they're the same story every single season, right? We always talk about the Eagles being unhappy. And we talk about the Bengals not having a defense. And if the defense, we just say, if they're middle of the road, right, if they're 20th, in the NFL, with that offense and Joe Burrow, the running game. Now, I wouldn't say the offensive line is unbelievable, which is a whole different, you know, can of worms over there. But leaving that aside, if the defense, they added Boye Mafe, they added Kyle Duggar, also added Brian Cook in free agency. So they've shored that up a little bit. They can obviously add some more. The Bengals last season, I didn't even realize this, they were starting two rookie linebackers on defense, which is very difficult to be successful.
And they weren't good.
With that. Correct. They also were not good. So they should be better in year two. They can't really be worse. Now they have some veteran leadership on that line as well. They have some high draft picks as well on the edge. Hopefully now Dexter Lawrence can also, he just gets double teamed and he still wins those matchups. So he can potentially free up some of those edge rushers as well. I think it's a trade that makes sense for both teams. And I think the Giants, you have to be ecstatic. You got the 10th overall pick. Even if it, you think it's a little weaker draft and maybe, hey, if next year, let's say we could have had the 10th overall pick, that could be better. But you don't, the Bengals, you're not expecting to be as bad to give that team the 10th overall pick next year either. You would figure with the healthy Joe Burrow, they're going to be in the playoffs or close to it. So I think it makes sense for both teams. And for the Giants, it's right there to have, you know, kind of a reload, not necessarily a rebuild under John Harbaugh.
All right, I try to tie a lot of these things together and some loose ends. Dexter Lawrence is a sure thing, and even if he is a player who wanted a new contract and is coming off a so-so year, he's better than anything that you could have gotten at 10. Now, he's a lot more expensive. Last year, they had the number 32 run defense in the NFL. The Ohio River ran through it, then everyone else did as well. This makes them automatically better. And we've all been in situations in which you feel like your significant other might be slipping away, and so you go buy them a really nice gift. And that's what this is. They feel like Joe's slipping away. Joe, can we buy you something nice and convince you that we're going to work harder? We're going to make this work, Joe. Please don't leave me. Can I interest you in a 350-pound defensive tackle who barely sits in the leather or fits in the leather chair next to voice of the Bengals Dan Hoard for the one-on-one he did for Bengals.com? Can this make you happy, Joe? Hopefully this can make you happy. The other thing, it gives C-Rob, as you mentioned, the Giants options. And I really think that this could change the first round, or at least the top 10. Bear with me here. If you take Adam Schefter's story this morning, both online and on GetUp, that the Cardinals, and I heard other smoke about this or smelled other smoke about this over the weekend. Charles Davis will talk about it as well coming up shortly, that the Cardinals might want Jeremiah Love. And if you put those two together there and say it's offense at 3, right, and that the guy that we all think would go to Tennessee at 4, that's the group think, Love is off the board, then do the Titans go wide receiver and do the Giants now go wide receiver because they have that extra pick at 10? And does this really change the complexion of the top of the first round? Personally, I'm not buying that the Cardinals are going to take Jeremiah Love. I think this is your classic, let's roll it out there on Monday and beg people to call us kind of story. Because the Cardinals aren't good enough to take a running back, even one that's this good, and have them turn into an instant contender. Now, unless the owner, and I wouldn't put it past Michael Bidwill, says, hey, I want a shiny new sports car, and this is going to sell tickets. We just got rid of Kyler Murray. We have a new head coach that no one really knows. Let's go get Bijan. I'm not Bijan. Well, Jeremiah Love is comp to Bijan. Let's go get Jeremiah Love, but I don't buy it. But let's play along. Let's say it's Love at three, and let's say Tennessee goes offense. Okay, let's say they go Carnell Tate, and let's say the Giants go Jordan Tyson, because there are people out there that think the Giants are on Jordan Tyson. That means at six, the Browns have the choice potentially of whomever the Jets didn't take it to, Arvel Reese or Bailey,
yep,
or Sonny Styles or Caleb Downs. And C-Rop, at that point, the best two wide receivers are off the board.
Yeah.
And I don't know that that's a scenario that anyone could have seen coming on Friday.
And let me tell you, like, what's interesting to me is when Adam came out and talked about Jeremiah Love at three to the Cardinals, the first thing I thought about is, well, okay, the Cardinals general manager, who remained after the changes, obviously, in the staff this offseason, is Monty Ossenfort. Monty Ossenfort was in the Tennessee Titans building, used to be a Tennessee Titans executive. Mm, it made me wonder, and I think we should all wonder, honestly, if I'm being real here, let me be very careful. It made me wonder if Monty Ossenfort is sitting there and going, feel like the Titans are taking Love at four. And maybe we can get somebody to slide up to three. Maybe we can interest a team in hopping the Tennessee Titans if we just send out this idea that, hey, guess what? We're interested in Jeremiah Love, and maybe we can induce the Tennessee Titans to go, ah, wait a minute. Man, that's the guy. That's our guy. We've settled on. He's the number one player on our board. You know, we feel like we're going to take him at four. All of a sudden, are the Cardinals going to take him at three? Are they trying to induce someone else to take him at three? Maybe we can induce the Titans to, you know, produce some kind of a flip-flop with the third and fourth overall pick. I think there is an element here of gamesmanship where on a Monday, all of a sudden, the third pick in the draft becomes this running back who would suddenly be, you know, rookie contracts are guaranteed $50 million at the number three overall, $50 million plus at number three overall for Jeremiah Love. I don't think it's a coincidence that Monty Ossenfort is the general manager of the Arizona Cardinals, spent all that time in the Titans franchise. And certainly there has been, now the Titans have been connected to a lot of players, let's be honest, but certainly Love has come up in the last, you know, 7 to 10 days with the Titans being connected there as well. It feels like a little okey-doke early in the season, you know, the week before the draft kicks off, to try and see if someone's induced, whether it's the Titans or anyone else, to slide up to three to take Jeremiah Love. And I think Adam has spoken to it. I think other people have spoken to it. If you break down how boards are right now, there are teams, and most of them won't be in position to draft Jeremiah Love, but there are a number of teams that look at Jeremiah Love as being the number one overall player on their board. So, listen, if that's the lucrative, you know, piece that you have sitting there, and you're not necessarily going to take him at three, it does nothing but help you on a Monday to put it out there that maybe we'll take Love if you want Love. Give us a call. You know, we got a couple of days before the draft kicks off.
I agree. And also they signed Tyler Allgeier in this offseason, who is potentially a starting running back, always was really good in Atlanta.
Still have Trey Benson, right?
Exactly. Like, I don't know that those players are necessarily Jeremiah Love, but if they're 70% of him at whatever, 20% of the cost, 30% of the cost, that's going to be better value for a Cardinals team that needs a lot, including, oh, wait for it, a quarterback as well to play. Right. So there's a lot that they still need. This to me, again, with just looking at the odds right now, David Bailey is the favorite right now. Jeremiah Love right behind him, and Arvel Reese right behind him. And those are the three players right now. Nobody else is better than 20-1. So it's kind of those three players in some order, obviously, depending on how it goes. But I think it just wouldn't make a lot of sense for the Cardinals with all those other positional needs to draft Love. Even if you say that he is the best player in the draft, you could go that way. My friend who's a Cardinals fan still remembers years ago, I think at number six, I want to say, they drafted Levi Brown. There was a certain guy named Adrian Peterson who was still on the board, who the Vikings took at seven. So positional value and all that does matter. And him, Jeremiah Love, if he's drafted, immediately becoming, I believe, the seventh highest paid running back in the NFL, it also is a better pick if he's a top five running back immediately than an offensive lineman or a defensive lineman who ends up not being that great, even if the contract is better. So ultimately, there's a lot to weigh for the Cardinals. It seems a little high to take Love with all the other things they need.
It's rich. It's definitely rich. There's no doubt.
Yeah. Definitely a little rich here. And yeah, I don't know that I buy it. And but if they do take him, you mentioned Tyler Algier. Remember, Love is comped to Bijan Robinson. So, hey, Tyler, by the way, we got you. We got you fake Bijan, and now you're behind him as well. All right, let's try to bring in the Aaron Rodgers story in a couple of minutes, because a bunch of guys had pressers today. You had a Chris Ballard presser. You had a Joe Brady presser. You had a whole bunch of pressers, including one in Pittsburgh where Mike McCarthy had his Steelers in the building as he starts the offseason program there with his team. And you had Omar Khan on the podium as well. And if you're expecting news about Aaron Rodgers, you did not get it.
Yeah, we've had some great communication with Aaron, and nothing's changed, but it's all been positive and good. And, I said this to you guys in March when we met. You know, he knows how we feel about him, and, we know how he feels about us.
It kind of reminded me, and I'm going to age myself, when Han Solo in the original Star Wars, with about 25 minutes to go, says, we're all fine here. How are you? It's like, yeah, there's nothing to see here, guys. There's nothing to see. Earlier this morning on Good Morning Football, Tom Pelissero made the point, C-Rob, that, hey, there's no deal. They don't know if he's coming back. They'd like to think he's coming back. They talk all the time, right. McCarthy and Khan and Aaron Rodgers, but they don't have a deal. And then Kyle Branch jumped in and goes, guys, he's coming back. Like, I don't know he's coming back. But, like, why would you go through this? People say he's holding the Steelers hostage. You don't talk to the people that you're holding hostage all the time. Like, he's going to come back. And Tom's like, hey, I'm not fighting with you. I'm just saying there's no deal.
Right.
Like, are we playing a game, C-Rob? Like, why are we doing this?
Well, I'll play the media game a little bit for the audience here. Tom Pelissero has a relationship with Mike McCarthy. I'm not letting anything out of the bag here. Tom Pelissero spent time with him. Mike McCarthy had the bunker, and
yes, Tom has done many pieces or with.
Absolutely. There's no doubt. I will put it this way. Tom Pelissero, I think, has Mike McCarthy's trust. Okay. So that is what I read into that when he says, hey, there's no deal here. You know, it's not done. I don't know if that, means that Mike is just trying to get the, float the balloon out, get it out there. If Tom is reading something and maybe conversations with Mike McCarthy. And then Kyle Brandt has spent time with Aaron Rodgers too.
Correct.
Right. So, okay. And again, this is just playing the media game, which you have to do sometimes. You're like, let me line this up and understand where these guys are coming from. But just from the baseline standpoint, I was talking to someone late last week about Rodgers and about the Steelers, and they made the point to me. It was a general manager. And he said, look, we're so close now to the draft. Why would the announcement come now? He's like, what difference does it make? Whatever they have decided to do, that the hay is in the barn. OK, they're not sitting there right now on a Saturday or a Sunday before the draft, and this was late last week. They said they're not sitting there having meetings on a Saturday and Sunday going, what are we going to do now? Like, we're only a couple of days from the draft. We haven't heard from Aaron. What decision are we going to make? Or how is that going to affect our thinking? He's like, that's completely ridiculous. He said, maybe they're operating that way, but if they're operating that way, it's a terrible franchise at that stage to get this close to the NFL draft and not have some sort of plan formulated or some sort of understanding of where the quarterback position is ultimately positioned. And then they made another point that I thought was interesting. They said, look, if it's true that Aaron, there's not this communication with Aaron, there's no implied idea of him returning in 2026. He said, the last thing you want to do is to let people know that before you're going into a draft.
I agree.
You have to target a quarterback. Yeah. You don't want to signal to every other team that may be targeting Ty Simpson. Hey, guess what? We're kind of screwed right now. We don't have Aaron Rodgers in the fold, and we're trying to figure things out. So just when you sort out the logical aspects of how the NFL works, I understand reporters, analysts, they're going to say what they're going to say. Ultimately, this comes down to Mike McCarthy. It comes down to Aaron Rodgers. And just like last offseason, when we spent late into the offseason last year going, seems like they got to have something, right? Seems like there has to be some understanding, because you don't go into the draft if you're the Steelers without having some kind of understanding from Aaron Rodgers. We're here again. We're doing the same thing. We're repeating it. Everything is copy. We're doing it all over again. I feel like they know one way or another whether or not Aaron Rodgers is in the fold. And if they don't, to put it out there that we still have this gap at quarterback and it's not resolved is a terrible thing to let get out just a couple of days before you might draft a quarterback.
It seems to me mostly just an indictment on the Steelers and how they've treated the quarterback position the last however many years, basically post Big Ben. Like, your number one plan is hoping that Aaron Rodgers comes back, who was already a 41-year-old quarterback last year. By my math, that means he'll be a 42-year-old quarterback this year, turning 43 during the season. We kind of saw what their ceiling was against a really good defense in the Texans in that playoff game. I think if they were still playing that game, the Steelers might not have scored any points. They're in need of a reset. It doesn't seem like they're going to take a quarterback, just for the betting odds. The O-line is the favorite at +115, quarterback 25-1. So I think that's like the fifth or sixth best odds for that position at number 21. It certainly seems like there's some kind of understanding. The draft is also in Pittsburgh, so there is that, as opposed to if it was Kansas City or somewhere else. That would be certainly an entrance or another time to announce that. If Aaron Rodgers, who tends to like attention, wanted to potentially do that,
no,
just throwing
way
that out there.
He's doing it. No,
that would be amazing.
Way.
I'm just throwing it out there.
I'm not taking shots unnecessarily at Aaron. There, he would control the moment in the narrative. He would not be part of an NFL primetime production.
But maybe Ben is suggesting that Aaron knows, hey, the stage is in Pittsburgh. Like, wow, wouldn't the news be huge if all of a sudden it got out on Wednesday?
A couple of years ago, that story about Rodgers came out on, I believe, draft night, you know, that he was open to a trade or that, you know, just
not saying never. Not that. Yeah, I would be surprised.
But I think ultimately, it's just the fact this is your number one option, is hoping that Aaron Rodgers comes back, who is by far going to be the third best quarterback in that division at best, regardless of you think the Browns coming out, maybe the fourth. Like, they're very good quarterbacks in that division. The Steelers are aging. They need a plan at quarterback. This just doesn't seem like a good plan. And it seems also like exactly what they did last year. They said at the combine, we're not going to wait for Aaron Rodgers. We need an answer before. Here we are. It's the Monday of the draft. We're still waiting for the same thing late February.
It's completely... They can say whatever they say publicly. Let's all put our cards on the table here. They can say whatever they want. They can have an answer and just decide, we're just not going to give it to the media, right? Like, they understanding.
There's no need.
Yeah, like, they decide, like, well, you know what? Yeah. He doesn't want it. Maybe we don't want it. You know, the second we have the answer, what becomes it's just like last offseason. The second they have the answer, what becomes the next question? Well, where is he? Okay, so he's coming back. Why? Like, is he coming to OTAs? Is he going to be at the, you know what? Is he going to be at the full squad minicamp? Is he going to be at, and I don't think I'm wrong here. I truly believe when he didn't show up to the full squad minicamp for the Jets, and they kind of fried him on it, that Robert Saleh came out and said, this is an unexcused absence.
It was mandatory.
I think it bothered him. I think it really, really bothered him. And since then,
it's
he
the
felt
CBA,
like,
man,
the second I am committed, the next narrative becomes, okay, he's committed, but where is he? And I don't know that he necessarily wants to deal with that.
There's only a handful of truly mandatory off-season days before training camp. Truly mandatory. And he chose to go to Egypt, which I would love to go to Egypt, by the way. Yeah, I would love to go to Egypt. He chose to go to Egypt instead of going to one of the very, very few mandatory days for minicamp. So he got fried. I think he deserved to, but you know, that's neither here nor there. That's in the rearview mirror. Coming up, Charles Davis, the voice of Madden, used to be like the voice of Madden. Now he's one of the many voices of Madden, but he's the best voice of Madden. He's also at the desk for NFL Network on Thursday at the draft. We'll get his thoughts on the top 10 and what all this movement means. Coming up next on Inside Coverage. He was once described by me, actually, as the world's greatest human. You know him as Charles Davis, who will be on the NFL Network desk, as always, 8 p.m. Eastern Time, Pittsburgh on Thursday, NFL Network, and he joins us now on Inside Coverage. It's good to see you.
Always great to see you. You're awfully kind to me because everything you say returned right back to you.
Right back at you, my friend. You're short on time. Let's get to the good stuff. My jaw dropped when the Dexter Lawrence trade happened. I get why the Bengals did it. I totally get it. You got to give Joe Burrow a reason to believe. Yeah. At the same time, Chuck, is 10 a little rich?
The way he played last year, yes. Like here's my thing with it. And I understand why they're doing it. And what they have said, and they've told the league and they've told all of us, what they've determined is trying to get a premium player at 10, they don't feel it.
I get it.
Right? They don't feel it. So that says something about what they how they perceive this year's draft, right? And what they're trying to do with the defensive side of the ball. If they get the Dexter Lawrence of 2 years ago, Andrew, how happy will they be? Ecstatic. All right? He's a record, right? Remember that? We were talking about, could anyone block this guy? He's just crushing people. Last year, he wanted the contract. He wanted things changed. Late to camp. Wasn't in the best of shape. I know his camp will say, hey, he's double teamed all time. I get all that. That wasn't his best football. He's got to pay this off for Cincinnati by being the guy we saw 2 years ago, and off we go from there. But boy, if you're the New York Giants, you can't say no to this. You just can't. And how great is that for them? They're now picking at 5 and 10 with a quarterback they actually believe in.
Yeah, I totally get it from the Bengals' perspective. I was having a conversation, though, late last week, and you know, they can get a one from, like, they're getting a one. Like, I love Dexter Lawrence, don't get me wrong. And I do believe he deserved a new contract, regardless of how last year went. But 10,
wow. That was a big one, right? That everybody who was finishing up their last mock draft, oh boy.
It's like, what are we doing here? Well, we know what the Raiders are doing. We know the Raiders are taking Mendoza. Yeah. Charles, I want to be clear here. I'm not asking what you think the Jets will do. I'm asking what you would do at 2, assuming Mendoza's off the board Thursday night at 8:08.
Arvell Reese from Ohio State, only for this reason. I'm making a projection. I'm going to make him a full-time or 90% of the time edge rusher. And he has the skills and the ability to do that. I just have not had it on a full-time basis. So,
doesn't that bother you?
Yeah, it's got to bother you. But it's like anything else we've seen over time, Andrew. Remember when we said a quarterback, you know, whatever they threw in college, plus or minus 2 or 3 percentage points, that's what their accuracy was going to be in the NFL?
Sure.
It wasn't going to change a whole lot. Like, what you saw is what you get. Whatever Eli Manning was at Ole Miss, he was essentially that in the NFL. And then when Josh Allen went, number 7 overall, we were all, oh, my God, he's a 50-some percent thrower. Now Josh is pretty much 70% thrower. So now everybody's like, okay, well, that changes the dynamic. Micah Parsons changed that dynamic. And that's why we're like, okay, we can make the transition with Reese, still give him some off-the-ball stuff, et cetera. Just don't confuse him. That's what I keep telling all these coaches all the time. I don't know how many of them care to listen to me. But don't get whiteboard fever, as I call it. You know, when you go up on the board, Andrew, he can play here. He can play here. I can move him here. He can do this. Then you get Isaiah Simmons. Can't do anything. So that's not what you want.
And the Cardinals, if you were to get to 3, have a long history of drafting those. I don't call him tweeners because he's not a tweener, but like the height, weight, speed backer. We're like, what are we going to do with him? And Arvell Reese is that guy. Sonny Styles, obviously, has shown amazing production as an off-ball linebacker, as a former safety, and he has the coverage skills. He can drop because he was a former defensive back. There's a world, and I know we're playing along here with this is all mocks, and who knows what's going to happen anymore. There's a world where the Giants or the Browns could have their choice of wide receiver. Not a lot of people have mocked a wide receiver at 5, but there's a lot of Jordan Tyson smoke at 5.
Billowing, isn't it?
Do you buy that?
I buy it more at 10 than I do at 5.
Okay.
But I think the smoke is billowing. Absolutely.
You hear, you smell it too, right?
Yeah. I don't know if it's exactly what The Rock is cooking, but I definitely smell something. There's no question about
Look at you. Look at you. There's the ESPN and NFL Network synergy now, and now you're dropping wrestling references.
Listen, I've been working on the people's elbow too while we're at it. But anyway, all that being said, but
if given the choice, would you take the quiet consistency and route running and hands of Carnell Tate, or would you take the loose hips and the wow upside but injury concern of Jordan Tyson? If you had to choose between the two.
I have Carnell Tate rated higher than Jordan Tyson. So that's that would have to be my answer. I would go back to the guy that I watch week in, week out, develop, play. The knock, of course, is, well, he's a number two. He's been a two. Well, Jeremiah Smith is, he could be transcendent. We know that. But that doesn't mean this guy can't become a big-time player. Talk about Tate. Big hand, you know, great hands, good route running. And again, 4.52, we make it sound like we're waiting for him to finish running the 40. 4.52 is still fast, ladies and gentlemen. You get a defensive back leaning wrong and then put 4.52 on him, he's not catching him. Okay. That's where we're all skewed now by what we see come out of the combine, Andrew. We don't get excited until we're sub 4.4. We had like in the 4.4s. We go, he ran 4.43. Man, these guys are blazing.
Yeah, because guys are putting up 4.26s. Yeah,
but I've seen 4.26s who can't play. Remember that kid out of Baylor a few years ago? We might even been together. Seventh round kid.
I went to the Patriots. Yeah. Tyquan Thornton.
No, there was Caleb Barnes, who was the corner.
Okay.
Who ran 4.2 whatever. And everybody went, oh, my God. And I think he went in the seventh round because his production hadn't been good in college. And guess what? It wasn't good in the NFL. You still have to be able to play the game.
Funny how that works. You mentioned DBs. I know we're short on time here, but let's do this. Because I hear Bruce Feldman, or I see Bruce Feldman write about it. I hear DJ talk about it as well. You are a former defensive back. There are some who whisper that they have Dylan Thienemann ahead of Caleb Downs. Do you buy that?
I don't. Absolutely don't. I think this is what happens when we get closer to draft time. Always these types of things happen. Always someone slips in there. And I'm not saying that Thienemann is not a good football player. In fact, I might have him as the second safety, and I can understand that. I think Downs is just a total package and everything we're doing. But I also, just so everyone, so I'm clear, I really like Downs as the best safety in this draft. I just want people to be very cautious because I don't know if he's Kyle Hamilton, Derwin James, Nick Emenwori. It's a different body type. That's all I'm saying. We're now expecting everyone to be like them. There are a lot more Marcus Jones nickel defenders at 5'8", 5'9", 5'10", than there are these mastodons playing nickel safety. Okay. We expect those to just roll up an assembly line. They don't. Caleb Downs is a well put together young man at 205 pounds, you know, but he's not that. That's different. That's all.
Yeah. And finally, something different to let you leave here. Charles Davis, your thoughts on Florida A&M guard Charles Davis.
You know, it's funny. I saw him at the Legacy Bowl and hugged it out and the whole deal, and you know, we're definitely going to be at the cookout this summer together. So I'm looking forward to that. I doubt very seriously he's going to be a draft pick, but he will get a chance to go to camp and show his wares. All I know is at the picnic, I'd better get there early because he's a large young man, going to be an offensive guard if he makes it in the next level.
I also, if on Saturday you guys do Stump the Truck, which is a tradition truly unlike any other on NFL Network, they better have Charles Davis.
Charles Davis, right? Charles Davis crime. Yes. In this case, it won't be crime. In this case, it'll just be all love. Bam, you. If he goes, you'll hear the hiss all across the nation with the Rattlers.
Absolutely. Please travel safely.
Thank you.
Love to the family. Hope to see you soon.
I certainly hope so.
You are the
best. Continued success to you, my friend, okay?
Likewise.
All right, let me see if I'm going to work on to see if I can raise the eyebrow like The Rock now.
Inside coverage on Yahoo, thanks to our good friend Charles Davis, who will be at the desk on Thursday in Pittsburgh. All right, let's spin it forward here with a little bit of Ty Simpson conversation. Charles and I didn't talk about Ty Simpson there, but most people believe that if it's, well, a 1.5 quarterback draft, maybe a 2 quarterback draft, that the other one, other than Fernando Mendoza, is Ty Simpson from Alabama. Does he go to the bottom of the first round? Does he go to the top of the second round? I have no idea. But I did not have it on my bingo card, Charles Robinson and Ben Fox, that on the Friday before the draft, Jacoby Brissett, whom I love, Jake Brisket, as I like to call him, well-traveled veteran, ask anyone who he's ever played with or for, maybe their favorite person in the league, decides to float out there through various reporters that he's not coming to the offseason program because he wants to get paid like a starter. So, C-Rob, this is, in essence, Jake Brisket flexing a muscle 6 days before the draft going, I dare you to take Ty Simpson. Which means they're taking Ty Simpson, aren't they?
You know what's funny? This is a Kirk Cousins story, and I don't think people understand that.
No, tell me.
Kirk Cousins is getting $20 million guaranteed
you're doing. Yeah,
from the Raiders that season. Okay. And what that formulates throughout the agent community is if I have a bridge starter, and you know, particularly an aging bridge starter, the floor for my aging bridge starter, regardless of whether you think he'll start 5 games or 10 games or 17 games, it's $20 million. And Jacoby Brissett, who they chose in 2025 to bench Kyler Murray for, to say, you know what, we're moving off him, we'll figure out the quarterback position, but Jacoby Brissett, he's our starter, we're sticking with him, we're going to tell everybody he's our starter, and we'll move forward with it. If you're going to move forward with him as your bridge starter in 2026, of course Jacoby Brissett's representation is going to say, wait a minute, we signed a 2-year $12.5 million deal for the 25 and 26 seasons, believing he's your qualified veteran backup to Kyler Murray. That's what he was going to be. Now, if you're actually thinking of him being your bridge starter in 2026, if you're going to go into 2026 as him as your starting quarterback, and Kirk Cousins just got $20 million, granted, part of it is going to be paid by the Atlanta Falcons, but the agents don't give a damn about that. That is now your floor. We're not going to let this guy play this year. I think his cap number is a little north of $9 million, but the way the agents look at it is, okay, 2 years, $12.5 million. We're just going to split over the 2 years. We're going to say it's 6.25 per, and you're going to have to find some more money because if he's going to be your bridge starter, he's not playing on nothing. You brought him in here on the auspices of being a backup quarterback. He's no longer a backup quarterback. We don't care if you draft a rookie and, you know, he's going to start in front of a Ty Simpson. You still have to pay him. If the Raiders are willing to draft Fernando Mendoza but still pay Kirk Cousins to play at least a portion of the season or give them the opportunity, the tool on the table to not have to start Fernando Mendoza right away, you damn well better be willing to do it with Jacoby Brissett as well. I don't know that necessarily means for sure that the Arizona Cardinals are going to draft a Ty Simpson, but I definitely know there's no way Jacoby Brissett's representation looked at that Kirk Cousins contract and said, yeah, sure, we'll go ahead and just let our guy get trotted out there as a potential bridge starter and not at least get compensated for it.
And on Ty Simpson, so as you would expect at BetMGM, the Cardinals, the heavy favorite, -250 to draft Ty Simpson. Number two, the Jets, but at +275. So there's a pretty significant difference there. Also, if you're the Jets, it doesn't necessarily make a lot of sense to draft Ty Simpson if you have multiple first round picks next year. Supposed to be a better quarterback draft. Why would you take a potential quote unquote project in, let's say, the second round or late first round? The Cardinals, you could also say the same thing, though. And Jacoby Brissett, no, I have no issue with this. He should get paid more because also he's going to kind of be the guy out there to sop up a lot of those snaps like he did last season.
Yep.
And hopefully the Cardinals lose a lot of games again this year. And then next year, they'll also be in a position, much like hopefully the Jets, to draft that quarterback in 2027 when there is the Arch Manning and Dante Moore and others potentially coming out. So it's kind of a different plan. I totally agree with the Kirk Cousins comparison. It's just a little different because obviously the Raiders will draft Fernando Mendoza. They have their quarterback of the future, and Kirk is there maybe to start early on, maybe to mentor. He's obviously, you're hoping he's not going to play too much this season, whereas Jacoby Brissett seems like if everything goes according to plan, he will play
right
a lot of the season. Which, and so obviously he's putting his body on the line, all those other things too. But the end result is you're not necessarily hoping, nor do you think you're going to be as competitive this year.
Which by the way, Ben, if that is the stance that we're sitting there, I mean, that's the point. If you're representing Jacoby Brissett, you're saying the Raiders are definitely starting or picking a guy that could potentially start
right in 2026.
Yeah, and he's and his guy's making 20. If you maybe are taking a guy who, by the way, is absolutely a lesser player, depending on which analyst you want to listen to, what argument you want to have on whatever platform, on whatever four-letter network, might not be as good as Fernando Mendoza. It's more likely that Jacoby Brissett is going to start more games in 2026 than Kirk Cousins is. How the hell is he making so much less? I mean, I think it's an easy argument on the part of Jacoby Brissett's agents.
Well, there is this other possibility here because we forgot about Gardner Minshew, and he is there as a Cardinal, and he's making about $5 million. And evidently, he didn't tear his knee. So, I mean, you could just tell Jacoby to kick rocks.
You could.
And yeah, you could have Gardner Minshew mentoring Ty Simpson in a van down by the river wearing jorts. So, like, that's a real possibility. It would be quite a buddy cop movie, and I'm all here for it if they potentially were to do it. There's another story that dropped Friday that I found to be quite interesting. And no, not the Bengals sending an Uber to O'Hare for the 6-hour drive to Cincinnati for a 30 visit when a player's flight got canceled from O'Hare to Cincinnati. No, not that. But what Zay Flowers said on a podcast, and he basically took a shot at John Harbaugh. John Harbaugh is an old school coach. He's legendary. He's legendary. He talked to any of his players, whether current or ones like Joe Flacco from back in the day, who said that Harbaugh runs a tough ship. Like, they are tough and physical and long practices. This is not modern day coaching. This is, we're going to grind you. It's one of the reasons the Giants wanted him. They want that back in the building. They want some discipline. They want some, you know, old school, we're going to make you tough kind of mentality here. Anyway, Zay Flowers came out and on the Fourth and South podcast said full pads all the time. How many ever practices and pads you can get? Every single one. We're doing one-on-ones week 17. That's why we had a lot of injuries, because of how we practiced, how he went. The load was heavy. And he said that Jesse Minter, he knows, used to be a Harbaugh assistant, but that Minter has said, we're going to get your work, but it's going to be a little easier on your body. So, look, in the grand scheme of things, the new head coach changing things up, I mean, that's always the way it goes. You pick the new head coach, and the new head coach generally goes 180 degrees in the opposite direction. But I think Zay Flowers thought when he said this out loud, it was going to come off as, well, it's Harbaugh's fault, and he really grinded us down, and that's why we were losing. To me, see, Robin, you're laughing, because I think we have the same reaction. It comes out like, wah.
Right?
Yeah. Like, this guy was mean to us, and it's his fault we didn't win. And I think there's some Ravens fans who are going, okay, maybe you're right, but dude, toughen up.
Yeah, I just remember when it kind of hit social media. I don't remember who said it, but someone was like, I don't think this is going to go the way Zay thought it was going to go when he said this out loud. And I laughed because they're like, yeah, it's definitely not. Like, that's not going to resonate with anybody in Baltimore where they're sitting there saying, they just practice too hard. And listen, I've been there for practices in Owings Mills. I've sat there and been like, okay, what portion of practice is this? You know, where you're out there and you're watching the scoreboard and you're like, okay, this is, you know, we're now in the 13th iteration of changing into the next drill or whatever. Are they really going to go the full way? He does. Like, Harbaugh runs tough practices and it's hot and he grinds them. But you know what? Don't fumble at a critical moment when you're scoring a touchdown in the playoffs. You know, like you want to blame it on someone else. You better not have a really significant turnover in a postseason game that changed your ability to potentially get to a Super Bowl.
And I'm not saying he's not tough. I'm not questioning.
No, I'm not either.
It's like I made that wah noise. I'm not trying to say he's a baby or anything like that. No. It's just it. I read it. I was like, I'm not sure.
I'm going to give you a fun story. And it will illustrate to you that players do not like practice anyway. I remember one time I was covering Atlanta Falcons practice, and I'll just say the names. At one point I'm sitting there, I'm watching practice, and I see D'Angelo Hall. Mm-hmm. And it's in the middle, it's a brutally hot practice. It's like, I'm like, God, I'm dying and I'm not doing anything. I'm just standing out there watching, and I'm like, this is hot as hell. And I see D'Angelo Hall kicking the living crap out of footballs, right? And it's like going kind of in a wooded area or whatever. And I'm thinking to myself, like, what is he doing? Like, and why is nobody noticing this? How come nobody sees D'Angelo Hall basically punting footballs? And afterward, I'm talking to somebody, maybe D'Angelo Hall. I'm saying, like, what's going on? And it's kind of like the attitude was like, listen, man, like when it gets to the point where it's toward the end of practice and like, come on, we got to cut it. We're dying out here. It's in Atlanta. It's in August. Maybe you kick some footballs into the woods, into the creek back there. There's some footballs floating around. And if there are a few enough footballs, eventually practice has got to get called.
I mean, practicing in Atlanta, practicing in Houston, practicing in Tampa, practicing in Jacksonville, sometimes in Charlotte, like those deep South practices during training camp. Look, Baltimore's got bad humidity. Washington's got bad humidity. The whole Northeast, basically, unless you're in California, there's a reason the Cowboys go to Oxnard, okay?
Right.
Those camps can be brutal, and Harbaugh is legendary. He will grind you down, but he also thinks it makes a tough football team. That's what the Giants certainly want now. And I don't think Jesse Minter is a soft coach who's all of a sudden going to run, a resort for training camp. He's going to grind them a little bit as well. It was an interesting read. Yeah.
It was also interesting because in Jameson Hensley's article, Flowers acknowledged the biggest lesson that he learned from Harbaugh was how to get them ready for games, including the way that we practiced. So it's kind of having it both ways. We're like, I liked the way we were ready for games because we practiced too hard, but man, those practices were tough. I'm glad we don't have to do that. Like, there's a little mixed messaging there.
It's like the old Michael Irvin. Well, when we played in the cold, we was cold.
Yeah.
Right. When we practiced in the heat, we were hot. No other way to say it. Let me get a quick note here real quick. That's redundant, Andrew. Real quick on A.J. Brown. Because Schefter had a story this weekend, or rather on Monday morning, that for all intents and purposes, and others have said this as well, Nate Tice said this last week on Football 301. All right, that the league basically believes that the A.J. Brown trade is done and that post-June 1, when it's easier on the books for the Eagles, the trade will get done and he will go to the Patriots, and that we're going into the draft that both these teams kind of know it. It's what Nate believes, not to put words in his mouth, but go back and listen to an episode last week of 301. Schefter said the same thing today. I heard somebody say today on the radio that the Patriots could potentially draft a player, maybe the bottom of the first round, they're picking 31st, for the Eagles. And that post-June 1, they could make that trade. In other words, we're going to give you a 1, pick 31 for A.J. Brown. We'll just take your player. I double-checked. I made some calls. You can't do that. That is against NFL rules. This is not the NBA draft, where they announce a player goes to one team, but we really know Woj or Shams has already reported he's getting traded, and they do the whole song and dance, and then they swap hats like Chris Webber and Penny Hardaway. You can't do that in the NFL. Now, there's the whole Eli Manning thing with Phillip Rivers back in the day, but that was different. You cannot draft a player and then post June 1 say, just kidding, he's really going to the other team. It is strictly forbidden. So it's not going to happen that way. If the trade does go down, it will be for a future pick, 2027 at the earliest. All right. Time for one more thing before we go. Ben, you get to go first after the band and the musical accompaniment. What do you got, buddy?
So interesting story that just had come out. Andrew, you probably know this better than I do. Jimmy G contemplating retirement, free agent, seemed like the Rams thought potentially he would be the backup there to Matthew Stafford. Just thought it was an interesting story, one to kind of monitor. Obviously, the Rams potentially, when they had the 29th pick, Ty Simpson seemed like that could line up very well for them. They obviously traded that pick for Trent McDuffie. They no longer have it. And right now, Stetson Bennett is the backup for Matthew Stafford. Why is that important? Well, ideally, Matthew Stafford plays all 16 games, several playoff games, including the Super Bowl, en route to a Super Bowl win. But remember, before last season, Matthew Stafford's back acted up. He didn't participate in a lot of training camp. We didn't know how he was going to look. The Rams also play, I believe, in Australia week one, if I'm remembering that correctly. So that's a long trip. We don't know exactly how that season is going to look. No team's ever gone to Australia. That is a long flight. It's just with Matthew Stafford's back, you don't know if or when that's going to act up. And he's an older quarterback, regardless of the back. There's just more potential for injury there. As much and as important as teams place on starting quarterbacks, sometimes not necessarily as much importance as placed as needed on the backup. I think for the Rams, that's a really important position for them to address between now and the start of the season.
Yeah, there's no doubt they definitely want to address that. I don't think they want to get caught in another position. You go back and look at the season where Stafford was injured. There were certainly people inside the building who was like, how come we didn't prepare for this better just right. in case we lose Stafford? I think they want to go through that again. I have one. So Dan Patrick, you know, formerly of ESPN, now obviously has a show streaming on Peacock, comes out today and he says that, you know, he's talked to someone. He feels like it's in writing that Nashville is going to host the 2030 Super Bowl, which is interesting because now that means Los Angeles, Atlanta, Las Vegas, and then Nashville would be locked in for the next four Super Bowls. But what I think is really interesting is I think this is showcasing what the new rotation is going to be now that all the new stadiums are sort of built. I really, truly believe the staple stadiums where the NFL would like to continue to roll through, it's going to be Santa Clara, it's going to be Los Angeles, it's going to be New Orleans, it's going to be Nashville, it's going to be Atlanta, it's going to be Miami. I think that's going to be sort of your regular rotation. That's your regular season, every single kind of Super Bowl rotation for the NFL. And then they're going to sprinkle in the occasional, hey, you built a new stadium, or you know, we're cutting a deal here. We'll work in other locales. But I fully believe this will not be a one-off for Nashville. I think with the new stadium in Nashville, they want to continue to have Nashville be one of those regular rotational Super Bowl stadiums every 10 years or so.
And Nashville is a great town. Obviously, you're playing with the weather gods there.
Yeah.
Truly have no idea what the weather could be like. This is going to be the final year in the Titans' current stadium. Their new building is scheduled to open in 2027. So they'll have a couple of years runway before this potential Super Bowl here. The other two stadiums potentially coming down the pike are one in Cleveland and one in Chicago or Gary, Indiana, if that even happens. I mean, what that would just be absolutely absurd. Chicago would be a bad weather Super Bowl. I don't remember if they will or won't have a roof potentially on this building. I think they would have a roof, but a Super Bowl in Gary, Indiana. Are you kidding me?
Okay.
But that's neither here nor there.
First, tell me first.
In all seriousness.
International Super Bowl or a Gary, Indiana Super Bowl?
I would say international Super Bowl before a Gary, Indiana Super Bowl. But that's just me. As for Cleveland, the Browns are scheduled to break ground on their new building in 10 days. On the 30th, so 1 week after the draft, on the Thursday after the draft, the Browns are due to break ground on their new facility in Brook Park, which is right by the airport, at about 3 minutes from their facility in Berea, Ohio. It's about 14 minutes from downtown. That is scheduled to open in 2029. So there's that. Those are the two that are coming down the pike. All right. My one more thing is not football related. It is marathon related. I want to tip the cap. We don't have visual here. I could have sent Maddie some visual, but tip of the cap to my brother, Seth Siciliano, who completed his 13th consecutive Boston Marathon today and did so at 2:59 even. He is mildly annoyed that it was 2:59. He is banged up. He's got a litany of injuries that I will not put on the TV, but he did 259, which is utterly amazing. He's generally under three, but 259 with what he's dealing with is pretty great. He has won every single, not one, he has entered and finished every single world major, and today was a 13th consecutive Boston. All right, fun times. We got one more show before the draft, guys, and then we get the band together Thursday for the big show. I'm looking forward to it. Between now and then, God knows what's going to happen. All I know is that the Raiders are taking Mendoza number one, I think. But wouldn't it be fun if they didn't? For Charles Robinson, for Ben Fox, my name is Andrew Siciliano. We will catch you next time, friends. So long. Wow.